Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And I insist that all attempts to impede, to intimidate, or to improperly influence the officials of this court cease immediately.
When ICC Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan announced he was seeking arrest warrants against the Israeli Prime Minister and Defense Minister, he warned against any attempts to interfere with the court. Now a new investigation by The Guardian and 972 reveals Israel ran an almost decade-long secret war against the ICC in an attempt to derail it from filing war crimes charges against Israeli officials. We'll speak with former Human Rights Watch head Ken Roth, who says the ICC spying revelations show the Israeli government to be a lawless regime. Then the largest university in Canada, the University of Toronto, files a request for the police to clear a pro-Palestinian encampment on campus.
We say to our administration, if you decide to move against the students, you'll have to go through us first.
We'll speak with University of Toronto professor Deb Cowan and a Palestinian student from Gaza who's a member of the U of T student negotiating team. Then how 3M discovered, then concealed, the dangers of forever chemicals.
After years of reporting on PFAS chemicals, I was left with a few nagging questions. I knew that some people inside the 3M Corporation, which made the chemicals, had known long ago that the chemicals had spread into the blood of the general public.
We'll speak with investigative journalist Sharon Lerner about how 3M found its own toxic compounds in human blood and kept selling them. She's a reporter with ProPublica and The New Yorker. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli forces have seized control of Gaza's entire border with Egypt, an 8.5-mile stretch known as the Philadelphia Corridor. This comes as Israel intensifies its attack on the southern city of Rafah. One Israeli strike hit an ambulance, killing two paramedics with the Palestine Red Crescent Society. Meanwhile, in Gaza City, the Palestinian journalist Motassem Dalul has revealed one of his young sons was killed in an Israeli strike near a refugee shelter where the family was staying. Another one of Dalul's young sons was killed in an Israeli attack less than 2 weeks ago. In Khan Yunis, families pleaded for Gaza's borders to be open to help injured children receive medical attention.
I ask all the leaders of the world, anyone with a conscience, to open the border and allow these children to leave. What have they done to deserve this? Where will they go? Where will they be treated? Where should we go? I kiss your hands and feet to open the border crossings. Let the wounded out and send doctors in. Send teams. Send the Red Cross and send the whole world to Gaza.
More than 30 countries have condemned Israel for targeting Gaza's healthcare system. The countries backed a motion presented at a major meeting of the World Health Organization in Geneva. This is Turkey's health minister, Fertan Kuka.
The healthcare system of Gaza is devastated. Israel has targeted hospitals in Gaza, completely destroying treatment facilities. This also means a war against the fundamental right to health. Access to food, water, and other basic needs are blocked. Israel uses hunger as a weapon of war. In addition to the collapse of the health system, we also need to consider the long-term consequences of inhuman living conditions, epidemics, malnutrition, and severe psychological trauma.
Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez hosted Palestinian Prime Minister Mohamed Mustafa in Barcelona Wednesday as Spain expands its diplomatic relationship with Palestine. Also present were officials from Turkey, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Jordan. Mustafa praised Spain, Ireland, and Norway for recognizing a Palestinian state.
This recognition strengthens our resolve to continue our struggle for a just and lasting peace. Rafah is testing the world. Does not fail Rafah. Does not fail Rafah. Does not fail Palestine. Long live Spain. Long live Palestine. Que viva España. Haya Palestina. Shukran.
Brazil has withdrawn its ambassador to Israel after months of escalating tensions between the two countries. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva compared Israel's war on Gaza to the Holocaust. In other diplomatic news, Chinese President Xi Jinping has called for an international peace conference on the Middle East. Xi Jinping made the comment during a summit in Beijing with Arab leaders and diplomats. Daily protests against Israel's war continue. In the northern California city of San Ramon, dozens of activists blocked the entrance to Chevron's corporate offices as the company held its annual shareholder meeting. Chevron says it supplies Israel with the bulk of its electric energy and owns deep water gas fields off the coast of occupied Palestinian land, from which Israel has raked in billions of dollars in profits in recent years. This is Wasim Hajj of the Arab Resource and Organizing Center.
Chevron is a major stakeholder in the unfolding violence we are seeing in Palestine. Massive shareholder and massive profits to be promised from the plunder of Gaza. And we are here to demand an end to the complicity of this corporation in that genocide.
Here in New York, a labor and delivery nurse has been fired by her hospital after she gave a speech expressing solidarity with Palestinian mothers and referring to the war in Gaza as a genocide. Hessen Jaber, who is Palestinian-American, made the comments earlier this month as she accepted an award from the NYU Langone for her compassionate care while treating patients who had just lost their babies.
It pains me to see the women from my country going through unimaginable losses themselves during the current genocide in Gaza. This award is deeply personal to me for those reasons. Even though I can't hold their hands and comfort them as they grieve their unborn children and the children they have lost during this genocide, I hope to keep making them proud as I keep representing them here at NYU. Thank you.
Hassan Jaber says she was fired on her first day back to work after receiving the award. Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, has removed a network of hundreds of fake accounts tied to an Israeli company that posted AI-generated comments to defend Israel's assault on Gaza and to amplify claims of anti-Semitism on college campuses. Some of the fake accounts were set up to look like they were operated by Jewish students and, quote, concerned African-American citizens. Meta and the network was run by a Tel Aviv-based firm called Stoic. The foreign ministers of NATO member nations are meeting in Prague amidst growing calls to allow Ukraine to use Western weapons to strike within Russia's borders. Germany joined France this week in saying Ukraine should be able to target military sites in Russia, which were used to launch missiles at Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken addressed the issue during a visit to Moldova on Wednesday.
We have encouraged or enabled strikes outside of Ukraine. Ukraine, as I've said before, has to make its own decisions about the best way to effectively defend itself. We're going to make sure that it has the equipment it needs to do that.
Russian President Vladimir Putin warned European nations are playing with fire and that there could be serious consequences if Ukraine uses NATO member weapons inside Russia.
This constant escalation can lead to serious consequences. If these serious consequences occur in Europe, how will the United States behave, bearing in mind our parity in the field of strategic weapons? Hard to say. Do they want global conflict?
In Mexico, another mayoral candidate has been killed ahead of Sunday's election. Alfredo Cabrera was shot dead at point-blank range while at a campaign rally in the San Guerrero state yesterday. Just one day earlier on Tuesday, a mayoral candidate from the state of Morelos was killed and another shot and wounded in Jalisco. At least 30 political candidates or aspiring candidates have been murdered since last September. In Hong Kong, a court has found 14 pro-democracy activists guilty of subversion in the largest national security trial since China imposed the highly contested law in 2020. Two people were acquitted. The group was part of a case involving 47 pro-democracy activists and politicians who were accused of holding unofficial primary elections. The 31 others previously pled guilty. The verdict comes as Hong Kong made its first arrests under the national security law over social media posts deemed as seditious. One of those charged is Chow Hang Tung, who used to organize large Tiananmen vigils before they were outlawed. Chow was already in custody on related charges. Here she's speaking in 2021.
The government always criticized us, the activists, the pro-democracy camp for destabilizing Hong Kong. I think it's the government, it's the national security law that's destabilizing Hong Kong. It's destroying the environment of stability, of security that people have been living in.
The 35th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre is coming up next Tuesday, June 4th. The UN is warning the Muslim minority Rohingya community in Burma is once again facing deadly attacks and displacement as fighting intensifies between the Arakan army and the ruling military junta in the western state of Rakhine. Some 4,000 Rohingya have been forced to flee to an area on the Naf River along with the border with Bangladesh. Back in the United States, deliberations in Donald Trump's hush money and election interference trial are entering a third day. Jurors deliberated for about 4.5 hours on Wednesday. In his instructions to the jurors, Judge Juan Merchant said, quote, "It's not my responsibility to judge the evidence here. It's yours. You are the judges of the facts," he said. In other Trump news, the Wall Street Journal is reporting Trump is considering giving Elon Musk an advisory role if the former president wins in November. And Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito has told Congress he will not recuse himself from cases involving Donald Trump in the January 6th Capitol insurrection after photos emerged of two flags associated with election deniers flying in front of Alito's homes in Virginia and New Jersey. Alito and his wife said that his wife was responsible for putting up the two flags. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Early last week, the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court made headlines around the world when he announced he was seeking arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant on war crimes charges over the assault on Gaza. In his official announcement, Karim Khan also issued a warning.
It is critical in this moment that my office and all parts of the court continue to conduct our work with full independence and impartiality. And I insist that all attempts to impede, to intimidate, or to improperly influence the officials of this court cease immediately.
Khan did not specify what he was referring to regarding attempts to intimidate the court or interfere with its work. But a joint investigation by The Guardian and the Israeli news outlet 972 this week reveals how Israel has run an decade-long secret war against the ICC in an attempt to derail the court from filing war crimes charges against Israeli officials. The report details how Israel surveilled, hacked, smeared, and threatened top ICC officials, including Khan and his predecessor, Fatou Bensouda. The investigation reveals that the former head of the Israeli Mossad, Yossi Cohen, personally threatened Bensouda, telling her, quote, "You should help us and let us take care of you. You don't want to be getting into things that could compromise your security or that of your family," end quote. The news outlets also report that Netanyahu took a close interest in the intelligence operations against the ICC and was described by one intelligence source as being, quote, "obsessed with the intercepts about the case."
The Israeli newspaper Haaretz today reports they were about to publish details about the Israeli intelligence operations against the ICC 2 years ago, but an Israeli security official blocked publication. The Haaretz reporter, Ger Megiddo, writes he was summoned to the office of an Israeli security official and was told if he published the story, he would, quote, suffer the consequences and get to know the interrogation rooms of the Israeli security authorities from the inside, end quote. The arrest warrants sought by the ICC against Netanyahu and Gallant include starvation of civilians as a method of warfare and extermination of Palestinians in Gaza. Our first guest, Kenneth Ross, has a column in The Guardian newspaper published yesterday that begins, "I should not be surprised at the lawlessness of a government that bombs and starves Palestinian civilians in Gaza, but I was still shocked by the shamelessness of Israel's efforts to subvert the International Criminal Court's investigation of its war crimes." Ken Roth joins us here in our New York studio. He's a visiting professor at the Princeton School of Public and International Affairs, served for nearly three decades as the executive director of Human Rights Watch. Ken, welcome back to Democracy Now! So let's talk about the significance of this expose. Yossi Cohen, head of Mossad, the intelligence agency, extremely close to Netanyahu for 10 years, leading this campaign to stop the ICC from bringing charges. Can you talk about the significance and how it affected what Fatou Bensouda did, the previous ICC chief, and then Karim Khan?
Well, first, this is a crime. Karim Khan made that clear. I mean, when he issued that notice that any effort to intimidate or retaliate against prosecutorial staff will be an obstruction of justice, in essence, I thought he was referring to Republican senators who had threatened severe sanctions if Israeli officials are charged. But he clearly also had in mind what the Israeli Mossad had been doing, mainly to his predecessor. Now, what's interesting is the Israelis clearly misjudged Fatou Bensouda. One person is quoted as saying they thought of her as, you know, basically merely black and African, so who cares, as they put it. But she's a tough woman, and she resisted, you know, these threats to her family, a sting operation against her husband. And she didn't have to act at that point because the court authorized the investigation to go forward in February 2021, near the end of Bensouda's term in June 2021. So she could have just sat on it and let Karim Khan, her successor, take over. She didn't. She actually opened the investigation a month later. And so this really speaks to her bravery. This effort backfired. Now, I think the most significant ongoing effect of this, if we think back last week, Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, his main argument against Karim Khan charging Netanyahu and Gallant is what's known as the principle of complementarity. That's a rule under the court statute that the court should defer to genuine good faith national prosecutions. And Blinken basically said, Israel's got a sophisticated legal system. Let them handle it. What this shows is that this whole thing is a sham, that the Israeli investigators, they're about obstructing justice. And we've heard about this for years from B'Tselem, for example, the leading Israeli human rights group that calls these whitewash investigations. You know, whenever there's some incident and there's international outrage, Israel announces an investigation, you then never hear anything further. But the announcement of the investigation pushes things off. They did something very similar with the ICC. They would listen in to what Bensouda or Khan were looking at, and they would say, aha, they're interested in that incident.
Mean they would eavesdrop?
Yes, they would eavesdrop. They would, you know, hack. And they would, so they learned that the ICC prosecutor was interested in an incident, and they would start an investigation. And they would then send somebody into The Hague, to the prosecutor's office, and say, we don't need to look at this. We've got an investigation going. And it sounded as if they were on top of it all. But in fact, these were purely reactive investigations. They were not good faith investigations. And I think that this whole hacking and surveillance and threatening incident gives the lie to Blinken's argument that Karim Khan should defer to Israeli justice efforts. These are not good faith justice efforts. These are cover-up efforts.
And Ken, if you could just put this in the context of, I mean, why would Israel go to such extraordinary lengths to compromise the criminal court? If you could give us some background, because does the International Criminal Court have any enforcement mechanism? What is the symbolic weight of decisions taken by the court? If you could place this in the broader context of what decisions and investigations and prosecutions the ICC has launched and made before, and explain in that context why Israel has done this decade-long attempt to subvert the court's work.
Well, the International Criminal Court is the world's leading war crimes tribunal, in essence. And nobody wants to be charged with war crimes or crimes against humanity, you know, as both Netanyahu and Gallant are about to be done, because the prosecutors requested arrest warrants based on basically starvation charges in Gaza. And, you know, no one wants that, first of all, because it means that if you travel to any ICC country, including all of Europe, including in more than 100 governments around the world, they have a duty to arrest you and send you to The Hague for trial. So, you know, there are real consequences, and you can end up in prison. So, you know, nobody wants that. And, you know, that's why Netanyahu was seen as obsessed with this, because, you know, it's not as if what goes on in Gaza or even the West Bank are, you know, low-level operations. These are very much directed from the top. You know, Netanyahu is commander-in-chief. And so he understood his criminal liability. And he seemed determined, you know, not to change the conduct, not to say, oh, my goodness, are we committing war crimes in Gaza? Let me stop that right away. You know, no, he just, you know, let it keep going and tried to obstruct the investigation that might lead to his prosecution for war crimes.
And if you could say, I mean, it was in 1998, July 1998, that the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court was adopted. The vote was 120-7, 21 countries abstained. The seven countries that voted against the treaty were China, Iraq, Israel, Libya, Qatar, the U.S., and Yemen. And Israel's opposition was reportedly stemming from the inclusion in the list of war crimes of, quote, the action of transferring population into occupied territory, and that's effectively what's happened.
Well, what we're speaking to now is something that has been going on long before this Gaza war. The settlements are war crimes. They violate Article 49 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which prohibits an occupying power from transferring its population to occupied territory. And the ICC statute, the Rome Statute, codifies that crime. So, you know, Israel has been vulnerable to this charge. It still is vulnerable to this charge. I would like to see Karim Khan bring that charge at some stage, because it's a straightforward case. You know, there's no complicated facts behind it. It's just happening out in the open. So that is a vulnerability. I mean, the U.S. opposed, you know, partly because of that, but also the U.S. was concerned with what's known as territorial jurisdiction. The fact that the court has the power to prosecute somebody for crimes committed on the territory of a court member, even if the person's own country has never ratified the court's treaty. Now, the U.S. hated that because it could mean that, you know, Americans are vulnerable. And indeed, there was an investigation that Fatou Bensouda opened in Afghanistan that threatened Bush-era torturers. But the U.S. gave up on that objection, because it was territorial jurisdiction that the court used to prosecute Putin in Ukraine. And Biden said that was justified. In fact, you know, Lindsey Graham, the leading Republican senator, led a unanimous resolution in the Senate that affirmed this use of territorial jurisdiction. So that objection is gone. They still say, oh, well, Palestine's not really a state. But the court has addressed that already and said, you know, the UN General Assembly, non-member observer state, that's sufficient for it to ratify a whole host of human rights treaties that we should welcome, as well as the Rome Statute of the ICC. So that objection is pretty much gone. And that's why Antony Blinken fell back on this principle of complementarity. You should defer to good faith Israeli investigations. And what this latest Guardian 972 investigation shows is there is no good faith Israeli investigation. There is a concerted high-level effort to undermine justice, to protect Netanyahu, Gallant, and others from war crime charges.
I want to go back to Karim Khan's predecessor, Fatou Bensouda, who announced in 2019 that she intended to investigate alleged atrocities during Israel's 2014 war in Gaza. She said at the time there was a, quote, reasonable basis to argue Israeli authorities are guilty of war crimes for relocating Israeli civilians into the West Bank to live in settlements.
I am satisfied, one, that war crimes have been or are being committed in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and the Gaza Strip. Two, that potential cases arising from the situation would be admissible. And three, that there are no substantial reasons to believe that an investigation would not serve the interest of justice.
So that's Fatou Bensouda back in 2019. She brought the she opened this case in 2021. And I wanted to ask you more about her. The Guardian writes, quote, as a Gambian national, she did not enjoy the political protection that other ICC colleagues from Western countries had by virtue of their citizenship. A former ICC source said this left her vulnerable and isolated. They went after her husband. They went after her. And then I want to ask you about the president of the Democratic Republic of Congo that The Guardian reported on, Joseph Kabila, and how they used him. This is an amazing meeting.
Well, first, Fatou Bensouda is a tough woman. I met with her numerous times. She is super professional. She is dedicated to justice. She knew she was facing threats. And she, you know, just persisted. And that's really to her credit. I think the Israelis totally underestimated her. They thought that she could just be pushed over with these threats, and it totally didn't happen. Now, Joseph Kabila, the Congolese president, is an interesting case. I've met with him multiple times. On the one hand, he handed over more suspects to the ICC than any other president in the world. So he is, you know, somebody who Bensouda legitimately was meeting with. But the Mossad head wanting to meet with Bensouda, knowing that she would not accept a meeting just like that, probably paid off Kabila. I mean, who knows? But Kabila is notoriously corrupt. And so Bensouda's meeting with Kabila, and in pops the head of the Mossad, which Kabila authorized. They called it an ambush. And that was, you know, how the head of the Mossad set up an opportunity to communicate with Bensouda. And, you know, am I surprised that Kabila would do this? No. But that was the kind of underhanded methods that the Israeli Mossad chief used to try to begin the process of threatening Bensouda.
Wasn't Kabila himself being investigated for war crimes or atrocities in war?
I mean, Kabila was vulnerable for, you know, for example, his forces shooting at demonstrators when he was trying to hang on to the presidency beyond the end of his term. But in fact, he was never the subject of a major ICC investigation. Those were mostly focused on groups in eastern Congo where, you know, he was, I think, doing what he could to stop it. So I don't think he felt threatened by the ICC. And had a cooperative relationship with Bensouda.
And then talk about what happened to Al-Haq and how they were eavesdropped on when they would relate to, this is the Ramallah-based human rights group, and ultimately being called a terrorist organization.
Yeah. Well, Al-Haq is a super respected Palestinian human rights group. I've worked with them for decades. In fact, I just did a webinar yesterday with its head. And they were communicating regularly with the ICC because they have field operatives throughout the West Bank and Gaza. They would collect solid evidence, and they would pass it on to the ICC because they wanted to see Israeli war crimes prosecuted. The Israelis learned about this because they were monitoring Bensouda's communications with all Palestinians. And essentially, in retaliation, the Israelis called Al-Haq and five of its colleague organizations terrorist organizations, a label that you know remains there to this day. Now, they haven't actually shut them down, but it was the effort to say these are illegitimate groups, you know, don't rely on them. And it was a punishment of them, in essence, for cooperating with the ICC.
Well, Israel is intensifying its attack. So if we could just go to what's unfolding at the moment. Israel is intensifying its attack on the southern city of Rafah. On Tuesday, the White House said that Israel's devastating airstrike on a tent camp for displaced Palestinians in Rafah does not cross President Biden's so-called red line in Gaza. Sunday's attack, which set off a fire in the camp, killed 45 Palestinians and injured over 200, mostly women and children. An investigation by CNN found Israel attacked the camp using munitions made in the United States by Boeing. White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby was questioned Tuesday by Ed O'Keefe of CBS News.
How does this not violate the red line that the president laid out?
As I said, we don't want to see a major ground operation. We haven't seen that at this point.
How many more charred corpses does he have to see before the president considers a change of policy?
We don't want to see a single more innocent life taken, and I kind of take a little offense at the question. No civilian casualties is the right number of civilian casualties, and this is not something that we've turned a blind eye to, nor has it been something we've ignored or neglected to raise with our Israeli counterparts, including it this weekend as a result of this particular strike. Now, they're investigating it, so let's let them investigate it and see what they come up with.
So, Ken, if you